Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, the producer, and the host of this show. First, I need to extend an apology to you. It has taken me a while to upload some new segments. I have moved from my state of Indiana back to Minnesota after being away for 25 years, and of course, I'm still trying to get settled. I hope to have a new episode or two for you within the next few weeks, so please stay tuned. And, of course, while you're sitting there putting things away, you have time to reflect a little bit. And it appears I'm now going on my second year in podcasting, and which, of course, I never thought I would ever do, ever. And, in fact, I didn't even know what podcasting was 2 years ago. But now I actually love it. So time, as it marches by, certainly does present new situations for us, doesn't it? Something I've never done, though, is to have a show where I interview myself and answer questions to asked of me for years. So I hear other hosts doing this from time to time, and I thought, well, you know, I might as well put out there some of the most popular questions I get. And maybe for some of you, especially if you're new in the paranormal field or you're just very curious in general of different perspectives, I'll be more than happy to at least give you my side of my life and my stories about it. I'd like to thank all of you for supporting my show and my efforts. I could not do this show without the talent of my music composers, my guests, my voice talents, and of course, anyone who has contributed to it. And we, as a collective, you know, society, we're very fortunate right now. We're in an age where there's so much explosion of information, probably almost too much, but there are a lot of paranormal shows on the radio or being broadcasted, and also conventions and conferences and the like. So one of the things that I'm hoping to do here in the next year is to start going to some of these paranormal conventions and conferences, and maybe I'll be lucky enough to be a speaker at one of them. That would be my next step in my journey of being a podcaster here. Doing this type of hobby, though, has opened my senses to understanding how complicated the paranormal field really is. And I think many of us who follow it or delve into it or want to immerse ourselves in it, we have a natural curiosity of trying to uncover or explore something that we may never, ever know answers to. And so I myself can be very interested in it during periods of my life or within my life. And, you know, right now my focus is on getting settled. And then from that point, we delve back into it probably pretty big time here. So tonight, if you can hang on and tolerate listening to my voice, that'll probably go very monotone after a while. I plan to answer some questions for you, at least from my perspective. Okay, so some of you have asked me, too, how I managed to get my start in podcasting. Actually, that moment was never planned. I do have a communications background, but I have never, like I said, I didn't even know what a podcast was. And I was sought out by Tim Dennis and Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio, who were on the airwaves, the radio, for at least 12 years out of Minneapolis. And they wanted to do an interview with me because I had, and I still do have, 7 books out on Amazon regarding many of the experiences, about 100 plus now, that I encountered over time. And when I put these books together, I just wanted to share my voice regarding what I experienced, you know, some of my most gentle to some of my most traumatic experiences. And I just wanted a record of that because I feel that this will always be a question that'll still go on for many, many years. So why not put something out there? But it was Tim Dennis had interviewed me, and he did a very good job. Unfortunately, I didn't let him speak very much. I was one of those nervous guests who just wanted to not sound, you know, terrible. And in the process, you can tell that I took over the whole interview. But he was very patient with me. And it is on my my paranormal website on Podomatic. It's the very first show that I've uploaded to the system. So if you're curious, I'll be giving you that information on how to get to Podomatic as before we get off the airwaves today on this show. The idea of interviewing myself, though, came about when driving home, of course, and thinking about my deceased father, who's now been gone for about a year and a half to 2 years, and how complicated the sorting process has been in my family regarding some of his things. Now, my dad had collected over time a lot of things. And so when you get to this point where you have to make decisions about what's important and what's not, especially if you have other family members involved, it can be a very complicated process. Motions are still ripped open from the event, which still is rather traumatizing to many, and it can be for a long period of time. And also decisions about what you do with it come up and all this. And so anyway, I have a large family. So, of course, when you get many people involved, you have heightened emotions and everywhere. And so sometimes people wonder where all this energy goes to. Well, believe it or not, it still extends itself out into the universe, which can collectively affect, affect us in some way and affect those that aren't even part of the situation in some way. So I want you to think about the last time you had someone close to you pass away or someone who is perhaps passing away now, and thinking about the closure process. Although, again, closure doesn't happen immediately for... This is just a small sorting process, is just a very small part of the closure process. But, and especially if you have siblings, if you've ever watched or seen how your emotions are doing this process, I can almost imagine you would agree with me that it can be quite challenging. I have a neighbor who's now trying to downsize her mother and father into a very small 1 to 2 bedroom apartment from a house that they've lived in for over, 45 to 50 years. And I know there's many of you out there who have been around and know what it's like when people collect stuff. And we all do this, of course. It's our things over 40, 50 years. Well, in the process of her wanting to help her mother sell some of these things or get rid of some of these things, her mother absolutely cannot part with anything yet. And she just hasn't reached that point where she's in a position or wants to be in a position to let things go. And it's hard. Things are things. You can't always take them with you. They're your memories. They're your emotions. They're things you put your emotions on. There was emotions when things were given to you. It all feeds on itself. Well, anyway, so that's her struggle right now. Her struggle is to try to convince her mother what to do with all her things that she still feels very, very attached to. Let's see here. What else can I blab about here for a second? Well, I think I could blab a little bit about my communications background. My communications background varies in different aspects. I've worked in a number of different jobs, and of course, I've worked in law for several years. Especially when you work in law, although it's common in all situations, conflict is at the heart of causing and creating a lot of our emotions. It challenges our value and belief systems, and it goes on from there. And of course, one of the other things that I am is I'm an empath. And an empath is someone who is extremely sensitive to the cues and the emotions and you know, any type of thing, you know, situations that are going on around them. And they can often feel this stuff at a greater level than the average person. And a lot of times what happens with me is that I'm surrounded by what we call an energy vampire. And an energy vampire is someone who just drains your energy because their emotion or their energy is so, I don't know, intense or whatnot, that it just sometimes people have a hard time, you know, wanting to be in a caring position because your energy levels can be just drained instantaneously. But then there are also those people that give energy. And you know who those people are, the people that brighten your day, uplift you, give you another boost of energy you don't know where it came from. And so, you know, as an empath, when I go out, especially on paranormal hunts or whatnot, or tours or whatever, I just sit back and I just start opening up myself, probably a little bit too much, which can be very dangerous, by the way, to see if I can feel at a greater extent, not just the energy of those from the past, but to see how the energies around me affect the energies from the past. It's very interesting, by the way. I really need to develop 2 stickers. Because I'm so direct, it has a tendency to scare people. I sometimes can see right through a person, and I think that is sensed instantaneously. I think this is where the problem is. I'm very confident in what I know and how information comes to me. Sometimes things come to me that I never thought about in a million years, and it's almost like someone's putting something in my mind as I'm speaking. It's kind of weird. I can't explain myself. I just know that I hear it all the time. You scare me. Well, you know, don't be so scared of me, because I'm probably one of the most sensitive, kind, generous people, you know, that you know. But on the other hand, you know, we're people interacting with people. Another sticker I'd like to develop is something that says, note to self, your day begins now. Because every day is a day. And whether we all choose to immerse ourselves into our situations, may they be happy or complicated or whatnot, what we still get out of it, again, is some sort of energy that either remains or comes with us to wherever we go. And so my day, just like your days, are always starting again. They're always beginning again. Some of them continue again, but generally speaking, no day is like the one before. So, of course, your day will always begin now. The more escalation that we have with emotions, by the way, can feed unwanted guests when we do not know an unwanted guest is around us, such as a lost apparition, an entity, demonic forces. And a lot of times what happens is, especially when I call them triggers, especially when they want to trigger somebody, you will see that in order for them to have a feeding fest, that a lot of times something usually happens and they feed them and the personality changes, and then all of a sudden their intense feelings recycle back to them. And oftentimes I find when people react to others in their situations, again, these heightened emotions can be a feeding ground for unseen forces that may actually be at work. It's really hard to know sometimes if it's a value or a belief system or if it's merely merely just something, like I said, at work behind the scenes. So I just want you to think about that for a moment when you're in situations of heightened emotions. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion about the energy, heightened emotions, and lead this into the question and answer session. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
And we are back. One of the things I wanted to bring up as a kind of a little bit of a story here regarding this energy that I'm just trying to delve into for the first half of this show is I used to teach on a college campus, and there's many of them, by the way, that probably have a haunted history out there, but I used to teach at a college campus that was definitely haunted. And when I started there, it was probably the best experience I had ever had in teaching and working a job in my entire life. You know, the people were friendly and they weren't backstabby, and just overall it was just a really great place to work. Very positive. But then I noticed over time on occasion that I had a visit or two by some of the deceased who died on the property back in the day when the place was actually a sanatorium. This is a place where those who were sick with tuberculosis were, I don't know if it was like a clinic or some kind of a hospital, but they're being housed there, but many of them had passed away. And some of these visits to me actually came about in my classroom, and this is how I first learned of the fact that this college used to be a sanatorium and had some deaths on it. Well, some of my experiences ranged from pleasant to unpleasant, but I think one of the most shocking experiences I had in my classroom was when I wasn't able to, because I lived 600 miles away, I was not able to be with my father when he had passed. And it was a very, very difficult thing for me to, you know, be on notice because I live so far away. And so anyway, one day in my classroom, I was lecturing to my students, and the screen started to slowly rise up, just very calmly, very gently, just rise very slowly. And this had never happened to any of my equipment over the past, gosh, what was it, 12, 13 years. And I just knew at that moment that that was a cue or a signal to me by somebody on that campus, deceased, who probably wanted me to know, or maybe it was my father who wanted me to know that he had passed. And I knew when that happened, I knew that he had passed. And it was easy for me to be in control of my emotions at that point because it was kind of like a cue that was given to me gently. But yet on the other hand, then you have to stand in front of a bunch of students and you can't fall to pieces, which can happen, by the way. And just the shocked look on their faces when they saw that screen go up very, very slowly and pointing at it, and I turned around and I saw it. Well, my general reaction had to just remain calm and cool. To them, though, it was fairly creepy. But over time, you know, in working at this place, you know, it started out real happy and peaceful and felt loving and all that, and then all of a sudden you get a management change and things can go very wrong very fast with the wrong people in certain positions. And so it went from a happy place to a collectively place of isolation, anger, no trust, and just misery. And sometimes I wondered if the result of this, because I saw personality changes in some of the individuals who were put in the wrong positions, I wonder if the negative energies that were housed in their building, where they worked, by the way, had anything to do with happy to very sad. And sometimes you wonder about that. But again, when we don't see things readily in front of us and we can't see unseen forces about us or things that are happening, you know, we only go by the amount of information that's given to us at that time, which is what we see visually. Of course, personality change, awkward situations, things turning from happy to very sad and miserable. You wonder if it's because of people's beliefs and value systems, or if there's just something unseen that is at work at hand. So let's see here. When I started chasing after the paranormal, and this is around 2007, by the way, when I had photographed the image of my great aunt and I think great grandfather or doctor in the window. The picture is in the book, by the way, very clear and very shocking to me when that moment happened, because I never saw them when I was taking pictures and with my digital camera. I found myself wanting to run after the paranormal more so than ever. But once I had my traumatizing experience, and it was traumatizing, at a bed and breakfast in Europe, I have avoided running after the paranormal to the extent that I had been. I had noticed over time, especially when I've gone on haunted tours and things like that, that I attract these entities to want to attach to me. And I have learned to try to block myself from being a victim of that. And I've also been possessed or been in a possession by going into a trance. That was that same tour that I was on where that happened. And I just went into a trance. And you don't know you're really in it at the time. You just kind of go blank. That's what happens. And then all of a sudden you snap out of it and people are like wondering what happened to you. And you can't always control what the paranormal might do to you if you open yourself up too much to this. So you have to be careful with your enthusiasm about the paranormal, because you never know who you're really dealing with. So presently, I gave myself a break. And oh, the traumatizing event in Europe, by the way, and many of you have heard this story a million times. I was in a haunted room, the second most haunted room. I wasn't allowed to go in the first haunted room because it apparently was worse than the second haunted room. Well, okay. A cycling floor-length mirror at the point that my husband threw the holy water in the room. We're going to bed, and the mirror went crazy, and it started cycling around in front of me. And then I had cold spots all over me all night long. The wardrobe that was next to my side of the bed was open the next morning. And of course, many people would probably try to excuse those situations, but there was no excuse when the cycling mirror started going at it. And it is truly a haunted room, and a lot of people go in there and they try to provoke or figure out who's in that room, and so the energy stays alive. And so anyway, ever since that point, I promised I would take a break from allowing the paranormal to affect me. And so I'm in my adjustment period as we speak. Some people ask me if I've ever been back on my grandparents' farm and have captured anything more regarding the little girl or the man that showed up in the window. And the answer to that is I've tried to recreate the picture at the same time and conditions as close as possible, but unfortunately, I have not been able to capture. I've captured orbs and motion orbs in that house, and I know that they're an orb because they're solid white and all this and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that I still can't to this day tell you who they are. And I suspect there's a portal underneath the property, and the property is sitting on top of a limestone foundation. So when the weather turns turbulent, you know, and drastic and all that, and especially if there's a lightning bolt that hits the property, then what happens is whatever's in there comes alive. And that's what happened when I shot, photographed those images. Bad storm the night before, was over there just basically taking pictures, felt very quiet and very dead to me. Boy, if I've ever learned anything, it's when things are too silent. Some of you might understand what I'm saying here. When things are too silent, that's when you really have to worry. But anyway, I suspect there's multiple presences in that house, entities who come through the portal, and they don't stay there, you know, every single moment of the day, but during the right conditions, you know, new full moons, you know, very strong energy out there, they do have a tendency to show up. So anyway, one thing that did happen to me in my new house that I'm currently in right now is a few weeks ago, I was actually locked out of it. And it's impossible to lock yourself out of my house, because if you use the deadbolt will stop at the frame and it won't allow the door to lock behind you. If you use the other lock underneath, I think there's more of a possibility that that can happen, but it was the top lock that was locked. And what happened was I was with one of my contractors and we were talking about the design of the outside of the house, and he thought that it'd be interesting to, well, just see if what it would look like when the front door was closed. So he gently closes the front door, and then when I went to go back in after he was going to continue working for me, I couldn't get in the house. And that was like two of three weird things that happened that day, and it was on a day of a full moon and also a strong full moon. So nothing surprised me, okay? But what really made me mad was the fact that I didn't have any shoes on. It was 100 degrees out. Thank God my garage was something I could sit in at the time, but I had to bring my husband home to get me back into the house. And then after testing the locks on the door that was locked, we came to realize that there was no way possible that I could have been locked out of the house just by shutting the door. So things happen. But what I do find very interesting too is on this same day, my sister, I believe, was at a cemetery and she was locked out of her car. And I don't know if these events happened at the exact time. I never asked her about the time that she got locked out, because then we could probably trace it pretty close to each other. But She was in the same situation. Her car would not have locked behind her just by getting out of it. But interesting enough, it was locked when she was trying to get back into it. And she just told me that after a point, it finally released and she was able to get back into it. But the idea is that a lot of these things can happen and we pass them off to be other things, but yet sometimes we're just simply being toyed with. And this also happened at a similar situation at a cemetery near Pioneer Saloon, just outside of Las Vegas a few years back. A van full of people on a tour, they were at a cemetery. I'm not saying this always happens at a cemetery, but, you know, I'm starting to hear a commonality about it. And anyway, they all got out of the van. And when they went, tried to go back into the van to leave, it was locked. And of course, guess what? The keys were in the ignition in the van. Okay, here we go again, right? I think the tour guide said it took about 1 to 2 hours before the unforeseen forces at bay allowed them to go back in, and then they just released the locks and they could get back in the vehicle. So, of course, as they say, be careful what you wish for. All right, enough mumble for the now. Let's see. I think what I'd like to do right now is play for you, give you a little break from hearing my monotone voice, the jingle of Maynard and Mildred. Maynard and Mildred, they are a comedy team. Most of you are familiar with this because I've run several segments on my show. It's a 22-segment. My husband and I play the roles of Maynard and Mildred. We sound like children. One is a little boy. One is a little girl. They are companions or best friends, and they're always delving into something. And, of course, Mildred is always picking on Maynard. Well, this 22-segment comedy show CD is out on Amazon, and it's also out on my website. And on my website, though, if you purchase it, the book, the follow-along book, which is illustrated, comes with the CD. And it will put a smile on your face and will put love in your heart. So if you would like to purchase it or you'd like to see a little bit more of it, please go to my website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. And the jingle will play. And you just scroll down through the books that I have, and you'll see the cover of Maynard and Mildred. And anyway, like I said, put a smile on the on your face and love in your heart. If you have any questions about it, just write me at krschutz1, krschutz1 at yahoo.com. And from this point, I will assist you in how you might get a copy of it directly from me. Probably more cheaply than on Amazon.com, but like I said, you're more than welcome to go there as well. All right, so why don't we go ahead right now, and why don't we play the jingle?
Oopsie!
How rude!
I'm Maynard.
And I'm Mildred. And we are
the Maynard and Mildred Show!
She's a ghost.
No, I'm not. You just can't see me. I'm invisible.
She gets me in trouble all the time.
I could follow you, Maynard, to the end of the universe.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Enjoy the show!
Thank you, Maynard and Mildred. Again, if you're interested in getting a copy of that, just go to www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. And once the jingle plays, just go ahead and scroll on down and you should be able to enjoy this show as much as we had preparing it. So let's get back here to what we're doing, and let's start the question and answer session right now. All right, so the first question that I'm usually asked is, how many paranormal experiences have I had over the past years? And my answer to that would say be that I have had just over 100 different situations involving the paranormal since the age of 9, but most of those after the year 2007 when I began chasing after ghosts or entities or apparitions or whatnot pretty seriously. I have had some interesting experiences with a variety of entities. And I've also had experiences with deceased animals. So, again, everything from playful, you know, trickery from little kids to, if they were our little kids, to, you know, again, the most traumatic being that cycling mirror at that bed and breakfast in Europe. I have had a wide range of it. And I'm going to bring up another situation in a moment, also being kicked in the air, you know, airborne, literally, from an entity that was upset with me for snoring. But I'll talk about that one as we go along here. Question two, when did you first notice that something around you may be paranormal? I suspect that I was probably age 9 or so when I stayed at my grandparents' house, when usually they're gone on some of these occasions, and I began having really bad anxiety and sweating attacks that I could just not explain. I felt like I was being watched in their house, but I was literally sweating. And I felt particularly nervous and scared going upstairs because, of course, nobody likes to know what's behind a curtain that is used as a door when you go upstairs. That alone elicits fear and fright. But I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my upstairs experiences when we get to that question in just a moment. Someone would say to me, question three, wouldn't you someone say to you that you just had an overactive imagination? And my answer to that is, I would like to believe so because I am rather creative. But no, I think when in this house particularly, this was not a one-time encounter. This was, you go in there, you try to say to yourself, there's nothing to fear. Of course, that elicits fear. And then all of a sudden, you start feeling things, and then you know that you're not alone. And I just experienced a lot of odd symptoms from that. For example, I woke up one time. I thought there was a gathering of people talking a lot in the kitchen, so I thought that I slept through something. I went to the kitchen and no one was there. I felt watched everywhere. When I went upstairs, just to, in general, I was attacked while I was sitting on a bed, just looking at some of my grandparents' things that were in a box, of a rotting smell that smelled like a dead animal. But it got really, really strong. It just didn't, it wasn't just like a, when I walked into the room, there was no smell. But as I was sitting on that bed, I was just engulfed in this rotting, deceased animal smell. And I wanted to throw up. I mean, it got to the point where I started to feel dizzy and I wanted to throw up. And so it literally forced me out of there. I figured that if I wasn't leaving, it was going to do what it could to make me leave. And what I found in researching the home was that I discovered that a woman passed away near the kitchen from a fire, and I suspect she didn't want to cross over, and so she remained in the home because she wasn't ready to go yet. And she was also very angry, and she was also very territorial. Now, I can blame it on the woman, of course, because we really don't know if it was the woman. But I don't know. Something tells me that, you know, a lot of times some of the entities that remain in people's homes, they stay there because they want to protect and be with this home. And this home was built around the late 1800s, and that was also a time, you know, you hear reported now that there just seems to be an awful lot of paranormal activity. Now, let me also tell you that paranormal activity can occur in new homes as well. It depends on where your home is built. It depends on what kind of conditions it's built on. It depends on what's been disturbed. It just depends. So you can be in a newer home and you can have a haunted home, or you could bring the deceased people into your home from just being on haunted locations, et cetera, et cetera. So I suspect this was the woman, I suspect. Question four, what was your most significant evidence find? Well, it would be the photographing of the little girl and the older gentleman in the window. Their images are so clear that you can actually make out their features. The other thing is, most people would say, well, you know, people have a tendency to do what is called face matrixing, which is we're so used to seeing things that oftentimes when we're looking at something or we want to see something, our brain starts forming what is called the face matrix. Well, I beg to differ. First of all, I wasn't looking for anything, but I discovered that it looked like there was like a something in the window that looked like something that was really odd. So the discovery came about when I purchased a laptop, blew the picture up, and they're as clear as day. So I don't know. It was just their time to show me. The conditions were right for them to light up like a Christmas tree. Usually an apparition can't hold their energy for more than 3 to 5 seconds. So the timing of that was just absolutely unbelievably perfect. But anyway, question 5, have you been able to capture their images since? The answer is no. And I don't believe I'll ever be able to capture their images ever again. I don't even think they're in the house most of the time. I do think they visit the house sometimes. And I do know, and I can tell you this, that when my a different sister and I went ghost hunting in that house and we were in the kitchen, I had my K2 meter with me. There was nothing electronic in the house. All the electricity and everything was killed. We were in the kitchen and I had my ghost app on that says words. And if they're intelligent, right away I know that I've hit a mark. Well, it just so happens my K2 meter lit up five bars, like woof, really, really interestingly. And then my app said the words like upon all of us, something like that, upon us. So it's interesting, but I think that on that day we actually stumbled into the kitchen where there was some kind of a gathering of some entities. We picked up that energy when it responded. But I can also tell you too that when I left that house, and this is the last time I've been in that house, by the way, one or more entities attempted to attach themselves to me. I was feeling very suffocated. I was feeling very dizzy, and I almost thought that I was going to pass out before I got to the car. Now, let me add to this story a little bit more. There was black mold. When you let a house sit for a long period of time, black mold was all over the ceiling. But this was not from the black mold. This was the same feeling I had when I was in Las Vegas, and we were at this cemetery and this haunted property doing a tour, and this is what I captured or what happened to me. Same feeling, same everything, when I was actually leaving that, you know, we were going away from that tour. And this is what also put me in the trance. This is what affects me. So a lot of times when I start getting these feelings and they feel like what I've explored before, I will tell you. So I basically sat in the car and shook them, tried to shake them off and told them to go away, whatever they were. But you just don't want to put yourself in that position, but it happens. Now, a little bit about the little girl and the man who showed themselves in the window. What's really interesting about that is that she showed herself to be about 6 to 8, and she died when she was about 10, and she also died on another property. She didn't even die on this property. The other one, which could have been her doctor, or could have, because we did a search on the images of what her doctor's name was, because we looked that up somewhere on a card in the Historical Society. And interestingly enough, that doctor almost looked pretty closely to that image also showing in the window. So I don't know if it's the great grandfather or if I don't know if it's the doctor, but it's one of them. That's for certain, and I know that to be true. And the man, by the way, showed himself to be around early 70s. My grandfather passed around, great-grandfather passed around, I think he passed in his 70s, but this image showed late 60s, definitely probably no more than age 72, something like that. So the conditions were right to bring that about, and that's how I know that happened for me. Question 6, what advice would you give beginning ghost hunters? Don't do it. Okay, so anyway, if you have to ghost hunt, the first thing you have to do is respect other people's properties and get permission. Do not trespass. That's number one. Number two, understand that paranormal hunting is can be very dangerous, not just from the fact of finding rounding up an entity, but also it can be very dangerous if you're on properties that are haunted, that the buildings are falling apart, and you could go through the floor and you could hurt yourself and do some damage. But also, if you're too gullible, sorry, but if you are, or vulnerable, use both, they can attach themselves to you, they can come home with you, they can start causing nightmares for you, they could make you physically sick, they could put you in a trance, they could possess you, they can do all kinds of things because you're not prepared enough to try to keep them from following you. So vulnerability and buying into what is happening is something that I have to tell you, that you need to be smarter than what is presented to you, because that little girl may not always be the little girl. That little girl could be something else, you know, disguised as a little girl. I have seen where it's easy for some demonic energies to shape shift, which means they can be a demonic force and shape shift into something as innocent as a child, because after all, don't puppy dogs and kittens and children and even grandparents, don't they somehow get a different level of our understanding or of respect than the average person? Well, that's what makes us vulnerable and gullible. And they know this. So sometimes they use that just to fool a person. Question 7, have you ever been scratched? No, and I hope I never will get ever scratched. One of the things that I have been, though, is I have been touched. I've been sat on, which I, you know, and that's, that happened in a very haunted bed and breakfast. I have been choked. That happened at one of my homes that was very haunted. By the time we left it, the activity was so bad I couldn't stand it anymore. But unfortunately, as retaliation, the entity decided it wanted to choke me. Now, some of you may say, well, are you sure that, you know, when were you choked? Of course, when I was sleeping. How do you know it wasn't sleep paralysis? Because I don't get sleep paralysis. And the other thing is that I know the difference. I can tell you, though, that I have also experienced, I call this entity the butt bandit, because one night, was probably just before we sold our home, probably a month or two before we sold our home, that I was sleeping in bed, and of course, freedom of sleeping, I had a sensation that something swiped very gently their finger across my rear end. And you know, it's kind of really weird talking about this because, you know, it's my rear end, but it happened. And so what happened is I was sleeping, dead asleep, and then all of a sudden I felt this swipe, and it was a very smooth swipe, and it woke me up immediately. I mean, it's amazing how I felt, how easy I wake up to touch. But I've been, you know, this is when things happen to me when I'm sleeping. So can that be sleep paralysis? I don't think so. I did talk about too one time I have been kicked up in the air. I was in this Groveland Hotel just outside of Yosemite National Park, and I was in the second most haunted room, I believe. never always in the first, always the second, you know. And I think a cowboy or a gambling guy or something along that lines, or maybe even another miner, you know, as in mining for gold, was the entity in that room. Now, I had no idea the room was haunted at all until the next day after this experience happened to me. And all of a sudden, I'm reading the journal and the things that had happened in that room. Well, that night, it was, again, a very full moon night. We were on perfect silver. I think it was silver that they mined for where I was at. I'm not positive that, so don't hold that against me. But the bottom line is that I found myself around 2:30 in the morning being kicked right up in the air, airbound, and then bouncing back onto the bed. Is that sleep paralysis? No. It was an angry, angry entity that liked to apparently hide under the bed or sleep under the bed. And the motion of these sensations are very smooth. There, I could not feel like a shoe or a foot, you know, behind my back when I was being thrusted up. It was just like I was just thrusted up. So it's a very interesting feeling. And I wish I could have you feel what I felt, but you just have to know that it's a very glidey, very smooth sensation. It kind of reminds me of light bulbs, as odd of a comparison that this is to light bulbs. When I'm in a haunted room, especially, and they want to indicate that they're in there and they want to use the light source, the light is a very smooth on, off, on, off. And it's not jerky or, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know how that is when something is sputtering. But it's a very smooth gliding light on. It's the same thing when being touched. It's as smooth as that. Okay, well, I've got time for one more question because it looks like we are coming to our end here. Let's see here. Where do I like to ghost hunt the most? Any place that is haunted? What's my opinion on the most haunted sites? The whole universe is haunted. So there's no place that is not haunted. It's all haunted. We live in a, you know, people die everywhere. It's haunted everywhere. Have you ever had your name called out? No, and if I did, I'd probably be running out the door. I think if it gets that personal, you have to really wonder who's calling your name out. And that would start to bug me, you know. Same as not being scratched yet. I hope I'm never scratched. I hope I'm never in that position to be scratched. So I hope that my interview of myself today has given you something to think about. Being a person who has lived in about 2 to 4 haunted homes now, with one being very extreme, all I can tell you is that dabbling in the paranormal can be a very risky thing. I think it's fascinating. I would like to go to Zach Bagan's Haunted Museum in Las Vegas, only if I can assure myself that I'm not going to come out of there and bring something home with me. And because I can't assure myself of that, this is why I haven't been in there yet. And I know that the paranormal is a mystery, and there's many of us that are wondering, where does our energy go after we die? Well, there's many theories out there. There's many absolutes. There's whatnot. There's many theories that could be right. But to pinpoint one over another is always going to be a challenge. And I just hope that someday, ultimately, we'll be able to have that answer. But unfortunately, I'm not even sure we'll be able to share that answer because it still remains a mystery until now. So be careful what you wish for. Stay tuned. Continue to listen to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. And in the next few weeks, I hope to get a few new shows in order for you as we continue to march along. Thank you for listening, everyone, and good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.